Welcome to the Slow Living Podcast. If you are ready to ditch hustle culture for good while continuing to meet your personal and professional goals, you are in the right place. I'm your host, Stephanie O'Day, and I work with overachievers from all over the world who are ready to stop living life in triage mode and start living the life of their dreams, one filled with abundance, joy, and a sense of purpose. Life is meant to be enjoyed, not endured. Let's get started. Hi there, Slow Down Society. So if you're a fan of the podcast, you're going to absolutely love the book. Slow Living, Cultivating a Life of Purpose in a Hustle-Driven World is now available wherever books are sold. Buy it for yourself, your children, your friends, and your neighbors. You can get all the juicy details at stephanieoday.com/slowlivingbook. Trust me, this is hands down the best $20 you'll ever spend. Hi there, Slow Down Society. Steph here, and welcome back to another edition of the Slow Living Podcast. We're on number 216, and I'm going to call this episode Stop Asking for Permission. This is the second part of the third coaching call with Melissa. And if you listened to last week's episode, we touched upon it a little, that she talked about that she and even a coworker of her were joking that even though they're in their 50s, sometimes they feel like they have to ask their parents for permission for things. Their parents are still alive. And that happens. And so I want you to think about where in life you may be holding yourself back because you're waiting for someone to say it's okay. But spoiler alert, you're the grown-up in the room, and this is your life, and you get to make the decisions. And please listen with just loving ears, and I'm certain you're going to just want to wrap your arms around Melissa and let her know that she is doing an amazing job. She's unpacking a lot of things, physically and literally, because they are unpacking from moving, but she's doing so much self-growth and lots of reflection on her childhood in different things in this matriarchal family that she wants to write about and share with her children. Okay, pretty people, here is Melissa. In the homework sheets, I asked if you have or if you will do a time blocking kind of audit. And I just wondered how that went and how you'll fit writing and working on the book into your schedule.
It looks like now that we're kind of settled in the new house and we have a routine, at least it's what I did last night and did a couple of times over the weekend. I say this like we've been here forever. We slept here Friday night for the first time. It seems to fall into the routine that once I get the kitchen closed down for the night is what we call it. It's clean and the dishes are loaded or put away, whatever needs to be done. I will sit down with my laptop and start working on whatever it is I feel like I need to work on in the later part of the evening. And as I mentioned, I have my watch and Alexa that remind me when it's time to shut that down, because otherwise I could sit here at the dining room table or at my desk and write into the wee small hours and then realize, oh, I will not have the energy tomorrow morning to do the things I need to do, because that is something I have to think about now. So it's looking like I do that kind of in the later part of the evening between 8 and 10.
Okay.
And I've always been a little bit of a night owl, a little bit. I say that my mother, were she to hear this, but a little bit, no. So I've always been a night owl, and I think that is a really good time for me to do that. Last night had a meeting, so that was a little bit different, but that seems to be falling into a routine, which means I need to push through and make sure that stays part of the routine.
Okay. So if you're working at your desk between 8 and 10, and then you're going to bed, are you fully asleep by 11?
Mm-hmm. That okay. is something that my husband teases me about. I am very easily able to fall asleep. I wasn't so much when I was younger, but I do have a little bit 20, 25 minute process.
Okay.
And do that, then I have no problem falling asleep.
And I'm remembering correctly that you have a CPAP as well.
Correct.
Okay.
And once that's on,
you're out. Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay. Okay. Great. Okay. So you're not waking up groggy, exhausted, upset with the world.
No.
Okay. All right. So for these, for so between today and next week on the book, is it a possibility to create a table of contents?
Yes.
Okay. All right. When you're sitting for those 2 hours, are you looking at your transcribed notes and sorting them, or what are you actively doing for those 2 hours?
I've mentioned this before, but I have the paid version of ChatGPT.
Okay.
Handy professionally as well. So I have that. I've usually spoken into my phone a few times as I've thought about things throughout the day, because I can do that quickly and it doesn't distract me too much from the whatever my task at hand is. So then I go back and look what I've added, and usually I ask ChatGPT where that should go in the narrative, because I'm not great at organizing my thoughts in a linear timeline. This worksheet, again, the life movie script, has actually been really helpful with me identifying where that should go.
Okay.
And then I kind of flesh out what I've put into ChatGPT and type that up and put that in my own words. Because mostly I'll say, don't forget to add this detail when this happened at this time. And I just have that little bit. So then I go in for a couple of hours and actually write the full narrative of what happened in those moments.
Okay. Can you tell that your process is moving things forward? If you continue on this trajectory, you'll get a finished book?
Yes. And it kind of blows my mind a little bit, because I've talked about doing this and started and stopped, but actually found myself telling my kids, who definitely hold me accountable for everything, I think this is really going to happen. I'm actually doing this. Technology caught up with the way mom's brain works. And I have a system now that's actually letting me do this in my own words, but in a way that would make sense should I want to shop it around and get it published.
Oh, interesting. Because that was not listed as any sort of or goal or idea a few weeks ago. You said you just would feel accomplished if it was out of your brain.
And I still will feel accomplished with it out of my brain, but it occurs to me, it's, at least to me,
okay,
a pretty compelling story. I have no
Good
idea
if
it's actually true. But
Good
I've
for you.
Told by my friends my whole life, you should write this all down and sell a book. And I never really thought about selling it. And I still will see, but it feels within the realm of possibility, which it hasn't before.
Yeah, that's exciting. That's wonderful. Okay. Okay. So 2 hours a day, a week is 7 days. Do you do this 5 days a week, 4 days a week?
I would say 3 or 4 days a week at this point, just to be on the safe side. Usually we have some kind of Saturday night activity. And my husband, I work with the youth group. I'm no longer the adult leader, but my husband still is on his end. And so he is often doing something with the youth group. And when it looks like it's something I want to do with him, I'll go with him. This upcoming Saturday, we're seeing Rick Springfield in concert.
Ooh, fun.
He's doing an I Love the 80s tour with Wang Chung and Rick Springfield.
How fun.
So we're embracing our inner Gen Xer and going to that. So Saturdays are usually off the table. Sundays we have the adult kids over, and so I focus on them. And then I usually have some kind of meeting, like I did last night, one of the nights of the week. So I would say 3 or 4 to be on the safe side. And
okay.
4 is probably good balance for me, because I do have commitment
yeah.
the week.
Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I'm asking, so you're looking at 6 to 8 hours a week of working on this book. If it's something that's enjoyable and a hobby and you like it, there is a tendency to stretch it out for as long as you want to fill whatever container if you don't have like an end. And while I'm not a huge fan of SMART goals with time bound and forcing people into pretzels to meet a specific goal, sometimes having an actual deadline means that you'll use your time better and more wisely. So we're recording, we're mid-July. Do you want this done by the end of this calendar year, or what feels the best for you?
I think by the end of the calendar year is a good way to keep me focused.
Okay.
So I like saying that. I also know I won't melt down if it's not done because I want it to be something good and something I'm proud of. But I do want to put that into place and say by the end of the calendar year because I think that's doable and because it will ensure that I do sit down 3 or 4 days a week and keep moving forward with it.
Okay. Okay. Just to be practical, do you think you'll actually do any work at the end of November leading into December?
Probably not. I mentioned we had a fundraising meeting and we have it. I was like, we're doing this during the summer so that we know what we're doing by September and October, I said, and we've made some progress because we aren't going to do anything during the holiday season. And we all laughed and agreed that we would do better to have a plan in place during the summer. So similarly, I will
Yeah.
do better to have a plan in place during the summer because I know what happens. And having the newer house that's conveniently located, I suspect it will become more of a gathering place this year during the holiday season.
Okay. So if November and December are kind of off the table and you use the idea of the end of October, so Halloween, October 31st, is that feel so soon that makes you anxious, like there's just no way?
It feels like a stretch goal. But I think I want to go with it.
If we did October 31st as a stretch, and then what about like March 1st, for like concrete hard deadline? How does that feel?
That feels good. And I learned like I have four largest grants that are due at the end of April. So March 1st really probably needs to be because
Because then you'll have to shift into the other
when
part of your brain writing. Okay. Let's do that. If we know that we can do the table of contents in this upcoming week, and I'll put that on your homework. Then the idea is you have your table of contents, and for me, what I would like for you is have sections and just large ideas of what's going into the table of contents. So then when you're coming across work that you've already written, or dictated, then you know, oh, well, that makes the most sense to go in here, and that makes the most sense to go in there. And some people, while they're writing, use sticky notes and like a large wall or huge whiteboard and chapter headings or subject headings at the top, and then put the sticky notes, and then you can move them around and see them visually. Some people's brains work that way, others don't.
Well, and it's funny because we did a lot at the meeting last night with a whiteboard and sticky notes. So I'm looking at my pile of sticky notes from last night and go, oh yeah, I'm well stocked to do that.
Okay, good. And then also, depending on if you now have created like stacks and stacks of paper, from your writing, you can kind of color coordinate the sticky notes. So then it makes sense. And I'm saying sense with air quotes to you later when you're going back in. But my hope and my idea is that all of these different fragmented writings and stories and ideas that you have, if you can visualize where they'll go in some sort of like map, you're just then coloring. It's like a color by number. You're like, okay, now it's time to do that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. All right. Is there anyone you're worried about writing about, or someone who might read this and you can already feel like a tightness in your throat or a little bit of self-censoring?
When my grandmother was still alive, I definitely felt that. And I think I feel more motivated and inspired to write now. There are parts of her story that are complicated. They don't make her look bad, but I feel like she would have felt funny about that during her life. But they definitely shaped why I do what I do, and they need to be part of the narrative. And I'm not sure I would have been as comfortable telling the story. But with her gone, I want to tell the story because at the end of the day, she did an incredible job.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say turn things around, but she didn't need to turn things around. She figured herself out and became a person I think she was proud of. And so I want that in there, but she would not have necessarily liked the details that I feel like I need to share because they shaped who I was. I was very close to her. She, it was within the family. Again, it'll be a compelling read, I think, but she gave my mom up for adoption at the age of 19, but she did it within the family. And my mom spent a lot of her time growing up believing that she was just her much older cousin.
Okay.
And that her half brothers were her second cousins. And then that all shifted. And it's a fascinating story. And my grandmother's journey, I think, is fascinating. So that one made me nervous while she was alive, but I don't think it's disrespectful to tell it now because I'm so incredibly proud of the person she was.
Have you spoken to your mom about including it?
That's a little more complicated. If it's a good story, even if she doesn't love the way I tell it, my mom loves a good story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping she will see it that way. The family was always 100% transparent about that. By the time I was born, that was common knowledge. And I only ever called her grandma. It's difficult to say what my mom will be okay and not okay with in general, I mentioned this a little bit, but I can't wait for her permission anymore.
No, you can't.
And she was part of the story. It's more my grandmother's story than it is hers, which I think will make that more digestible for her.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
In the slide deck for Simple Shortcuts to Peace, those books that I recommended, the one on kind of healing the daughters and mothers book called Will I Ever Be Good Enough? Did you pick that one up?
I'm a little scared of it. And I mean, I went back, I bought the Slow Living book when it came out. And I'm reading and I'm familiar with a lot of it because of the Simple Shortcuts to Peace. And then we reached the chapter that talks about adult children. And at the time I was like, oh, I'm going to have to circle back to this, which I have since done. And similarly, I see that get recommended. And again, I've participated in Simple Shortcuts to Peace, and we'll see when I get brave enough. I know that it would be beneficial, but I'm still waiting to circle back to that.
Okay. Is there anything that you're going to write about that your adult children would be uncomfortable with or tender about that you need to get in front of?
I don't think so. And we had some conversations about that over the weekend. As they get older, my story is nowhere nearly as complex as their great grandmother's, and she lived for a long time. They all remember her really well, except my youngest. And they're less like they know I'm telling that story in conjunction with my story, but they're proud of my story in the way I'm proud of my grandmother's story, although I don't think mine is as impressive.
Your mom right now, would you consider her the matriarch of the family, or have you stepped into that role?
I would never presume to tell her I have stepped into that role because I'm smarter than that, but the rest of the family would probably call me that. And the story talks about the reason why we're so matriarchal in my family. And it's usually we pick great guys. And in the case of my great great grandmother, they just leave us too young and leave us no choice but to step up.
Leave you meaning they pass away?
Yes,
Okay.
kind of the start of my story. My parents were in college, similar trajectory to a lot of kids born in the late 60s, early 70s. My dad was in the Navy when I was born because it was select your branch of military service during Vietnam or have it selected for you. And when they came back to Oklahoma, when he finished his naval service, I spent a lot of time at my great great grandmother's home. She lived with her daughter and her daughter's husband, who was a World War II veteran. And so a lot of me, I'm a little old fashioned, but a lot of me was shaped because I spent my formative years with my great great grandmother. And she was also a mother of five. And when her youngest was 18 months old, her husband had appendicitis, and this was in 1918. And they did emergency surgery on the dining room table, so the story goes, and he did not survive the surgery. And she suddenly found herself having to support five kids and being told, you do this financially by giving the kids to your relatives and striking off on your own. And she absolutely would not do that. And she did keep the five together. She did do incredible things. And it's hard, but the way she spoke about her husband, I understood as a little girl that she was old. So I understood that, he had passed away before I was born. But the way she spoke about him, we're having these conversations in 1975, and he'd been gone longer than they'd been married, and she still missed him and loved him very much. And I believe kept the family together in part as her tribute to him.
Yeah.
So anyway, she was an early influence. And as I wrote this out a little bit last night on the worksheet, an early and still continues to be a big influence on me.
Yeah. In strong matriarchal families, and I think I'll have you do some homework on this of writing out qualities of your mom and your grandma. And then your daughters and how you compare and contrast what's different and what's the same. But at times it's like there's a power struggle, and sometimes daughters feel like they're like a dog on a, for lack of a better term, and because my brain works in split metaphors all the time. Like with the choke chain, and you get like slightly out of line and you're like jerked back in. But when the rules change, or when you don't know exactly what the rules are, at times you feel like you're living your life walking on eggshells, worried you're about to get jerked back all the time. Some people liken it to like touching a live wire. Like I didn't realize, I was about to get in trouble here until I got too close to the electric fence and got zapped, kind of thing. Does that sound right to you?
It does. What I've realized journaling about this throughout my life, trying different ways, there are on my mom's side of the family, there are two kinds of women. There are the traditional mamas who have the large families and love their kids beyond everything and do everything they can to make sure the kids have what they need. And then there's the other side, which is my three times great grandmother, my great great grandmother's mother. She married her husband. They had four children. I think my great great grandmother was the oldest. If not, she was the oldest girl for sure. And then mid-marriage, she fell in love with her brother-in-law, who was a few years younger. Honestly, if I look at the family tree, actually her age, and her husband was quite a bit older. And she divorced her husband and eloped with his younger brother, and they ran off and lived in New Mexico territory.
Okay.
I wish I could tell her story, because I'm sure it's way more interesting, but she didn't leave behind any journals, and my great-great-grandmother didn't like to talk about her very much.
Oh, that's funny.
And in every generation, there's the traditional moms, and there's the moms that, you know, metaphorically run off to New Mexico territory. And the challenge in our family, as you grow up as a girl, is kind of deciding which one of those you're going to be. And my grandmother's story is fascinating, because she ultimately wound up being both.
Yeah. So and, what are you?
Oh, I have five kids. Always took them to church every Sunday, very much. And I knew that was going to be my role. I wanted that to be my role.
Is there a piece of you that's envious of the runaway moms?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure that is why I adored my grandmother. She, remarried when I was a little girl. She had gone on a singles cruise. She was recently divorced from my uncle's father. We know very little about my mom's father, but she was recently divorced. She went on a singles cruise. She met a very stable businessman, married him. They eloped. They eloped in Gainesville, because they were, you know, and moved to Las Vegas, where he had just sold his construction business, which he owned a construction business that worked on the strip in the late 70s, early 80s. So selling that, he had retired, and they lived the life for the 25 years they were married before he passed away. She took cruises. When you go see her in Vegas, she, you know, would take you the places where you could go as a kid. And then she'd go into the casino, you know, and she wore leopard and zebra print clothing and had fancy jewelry. And I never felt pulled to be that person, but I think I loved her because we were so, so very different. And yet in the end, she moved back here after her husband passed away, embraced and stepped into that role of matriarch, and became, you know, as beloved to my kids as my great grandmother and my great great grandmother were to me. So she really lived both experiences. Again, I can't tell this story without telling hers, because she inhabited both roles at different times, but she was super fun in ways that I will never be. And I think I adored her for that.
Yeah. That I can imagine you being younger and just kind of being in awe of someone who's that kind of loose, not loose, like in a bat, you know what I mean? But relaxed and yeah. And especially, well, I mean, so you've been masking for a long time, unbeknownst to you, with the ADHD and the autism diagnosis. Is there ever a piece of you that, like when do you feel the most like, I'm fully unmasked and myself and loved unconditionally, and no one's jerking me back in place, and I'm not about to get in trouble. When does that kind of relaxed feeling come to you?
I mean, growing up, that was definitely with her. That, again, mapping out yesterday, one of the things it asks you to list are like key moments. I spent summers with her, and then sometimes she would go, because of the heat in Vegas, to my uncle's home in Seattle. And so Seattle summers were huge with me when I was a kid. And that was where I was my happiest. I had a cousin who was 9 months older. He would come visit his dad, my uncle, for the summer. And we just kind of ran free, whether it was at my uncle's home in Seattle, or one of my grandmother's stepdaughters had a Christmas tree farm in Oregon. And it was a great way to grow up. We camped on at Hood's Canal and slept in pup tents right next to the beach. For a little Oklahoma girl, I had a lot of experiences that I know a lot of people don't get, but I feel myself in nature. Mm-hmm. I felt loved unconditionally, mostly from my grandmother growing up. And I think that's because she grew up with so many conditions placed on her that she wasn't about to do that to anyone she loved. And so when I feel unconditionally loved, is when I feel myself. I also am fairly sure that the ADHD comes from her and her dad, who mm-hmm. I'm a little about because he and my great grandmother divorced when my grandmother was young. Mm-hmm. Again, this is a good story with a lot of circles and matriarchy. And I don't know that it's interesting to anyone but our family, but it's still, I think, important to tell because it is interesting to look at when you step back and look at the patterns. But with her, I always felt that way. With my kids, it was so great after feeling, you know, in public school and a little bit in college, like I had to be a certain way. And certainly at church, like I had to be a certain way. You have these people in your house and they just love you for being there.
Yeah. So with your own kids, and apologizing for the past here and there, what can you do to kind of make everyone realize that when you were younger and you were doing the traditional wife and traditional mother thing, you were playing a role and were so worried about doing it wrong that at times maybe you weren't as loose and carefree, and perhaps it came across to them, or not all of them, but some of them, that they had to be a certain way, and the love didn't feel as unconditional to them, and you get that now. Is there a way to either convey that in your writing to them, or to sit each one of them down, or whomever you do need to sit down and just say, so I get it now. I can see it from your point of view, or perception, that what I thought was doing right might've come across as not fully, being what you needed at the time.
Well, and I have had that conversation with each of them at different times. My 16-year-old honestly barely remembers. She was six, barely remembers our time in the church at all. And the last 5 years leading up to us making that decision, we had kind of already decided to engage with the church at what we felt comfortable with. And we're doing things a little differently than the traditional families were. And I was generally myself around the kids when they were little because they were the only people I felt like I could be myself around. But I've had some conversations with each of them at moments where I felt it was appropriate to have those with each of them. So we are already having those conversations.
Okay. And, so there's no more prickles. There's no one that, like, it feels like you're hugging a porcupine.
No, there are still things to work through. But what I'm grateful for is my kids feel like they can text me and say, hey, I just had a therapy session, or I was just thinking about this. And do you remember when you did this? This is how it hit. And of course, you never mean for it to hit the way they've described it. And I mentioned this Saturday in the Simple Shortcuts to Peace call. It's hard to hear those things. It's hard to acknowledge you did those things. And even though you knew where you were and why you did those things, again, I have a therapist who says, you know, this is where you were at. It's, so it's, you know, it's, it wasn't terrible that you handled it in this way. It was how you knew to handle it at the time. And that's true, but it's also true that they are adults, but they still need things from me. And mostly what they need from me is acknowledgement that I did that wrong and apologies for doing that wrong. And hey, how would you like me to do this moving forward? We're both still just figuring this out. When my oldest was born, it was kind of a traumatic delivery. And when they held her up and showed her to me, she wasn't crying, but she was scanning the room, which made me feel better. Their eyes were looking around. And she kind of looked at me because they say that a newborn will know their mom's voice. And I swear her little face just said, what the heck was that? And I looked back at her and I was exhausted, but I just looked back at her and my thought was, I don't know. You tell me, kid, we're figuring this out together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 28 years later with the five of them, we're still figuring this out together, but we do have conversations and I'm so, so grateful that they're texting me these things or saying these things to me. And they're not easy things to hear and to process. but it feels so good that they can do that now.
I'm glad. I'm glad. So even though the holidays are 5-6 months away, will everyone come home to this new house?
Yes, they're all very excited about the new house at the moment, and I know it won't last, but at the moment, all five of them still live in town. And
that's very cool.
One just signed a lease on an apartment, so I know she'll be here through December.
Okay.
So they will, and they've all kind of come in. I mean, the 16-year-old lives here, but the rest of them have made their way over at different points over the week to check out the house and check in with me. And I think because they are adults, it's the first week in quite some time that I've had contact and visits from all five of them in the same week.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you feel secure with the phrase, you know, I'm a good mom. I am a good mom. I am a good mom.
We're working on it because, again, they're still bringing things to my attention that hurt them. And sometimes because there were five of them and everything was busy, they're not things I remember saying or doing in the moment. But the one thing I do know from my own childhood is that whether I remember it or not, doesn't matter. It deserves acknowledgement and recognition and apology if that's what's dictated, because sometimes what they remember is embarrassing, but hilarious. They don't want apologies. They just want to say, remember when you did this? And I'm like, I most certainly do not, but that sounds like something I would have done. And then we laugh about it. So they're still working through, you know, the things that didn't work for them. And I'm grateful that they're able to do that. That's not something that was acknowledged much when I was a young adult, which I think is generational.
Absolutely. I believe that is a marker of a good mom, is you're listening and you're present and you're not deflecting and you're not defending. You're still parenting because they're coming to you and you're able to look at them as still their mom and give them what it is they're asking for, which is acknowledgement and at times, if necessary, an apology. So absolutely, Melissa, you are a very good mom.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'll write up some notes and give you some homework. You've done a lot, and I appreciate you being patient with me while I circled back around in different ways without trying to put you on a spot, but I still wanted I wanted to get through to some things. So thank you for allowing me to do that. And I think touching upon all of the different dynamics in play in a matriarchal family is so beneficial. And I think readers of your forthcoming book will get that. Absolutely. And it's fascinating to me how it's kind of all come full circle that, I mean, you said you were in Rainbow Girls when you were younger and different things, how all of the stuff you've done has kind of culminated to this point where it all gets to get out of your brain. Very cool. Okay. Anything else before we log off?
I am good. And thank you for your patience with moving in the middle of coaching. But I don't, when I sent the email, you don't know what that timeline is going to be. It took us, you know, 9 months to find a house that was going to work for us. And so thank you for your patience. The more the house comes together, the more put together I feel, and the more attention I can pay to my homework.
I think you're doing great. Okay. All right. I'm going to hit end record. Okay. That was such an amazing episode. And we really circled around to a lot of kind of tricky and touchy topics. And Melissa handled it with such grace. And that's essentially why I wanted to call this episode to stop asking permission, to really step into who you are and your authentic self. And I'm certain as listeners, you're able to see in real time as Melissa makes these shifts. A few different things bubbled up while we were talking and I was taking some notes. I want to give you some past podcast episodes to listen to. We launched into this second part of the call in time blocking because I had given her a time blocking exercise. If you haven't listened to the time blocking episode, that's episode number 91. And then episode 96 and 97 are about bad advice. And so if you haven't listened to that, I'd like you to. Number 96, the bad advice is to feel the fear and do it anyway. And episode number 97, the bad advice is fake it till you make it. Don't like either of those things. And I explain why. Episode 134 is all about unconditional love. We talk about this with Melissa talking about her children. Episode number 163, are you a perfectionist? Lots of time people think that they're procrastinators and really it's because they're perfectionists. And number 164, recovering from people pleasing. Melissa has a pattern of this. I have a pattern of this. Probably you do also. Those are great episodes to listen to. All right, pretty people. As always, I think you're amazing and lovely and wonderful and kind. You're having a great hair day. I think you are just precious, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with you in any way. If you are ready to start living slowly and ditch the hustle mindset for good, reach out to me. I'm a real person, and you can track me down online at stephanieoday.com. Also, if you found value in this podcast, please share it with your family and friends and tag me on Instagram at stephanieoday. While you're at it, go ahead and leave a positive review on your favorite podcast app. The more we share, like, the more people we can reach and share the slow down lifestyle and messaging. Thank you, Slow Down Society, and have a great day.